This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Razorback football team has five, possibly six games left in 2013. The men's and women's basketball teams will play a combined schedule of more than 60 games between November and the end of March. And the Razorback baseball team will play more than 55 games before the end of the season. All of the games will be on the radio, continuing a tradition of Razorback broadcasting that dates back more than 60 years. In the new book, Voices of the Razorbacks, Hoyt Purvis and Stanley Sharp trace the history of the people who have been the play-by-play voices of the Razorback teams. Recently, one of the authors, Hoyt Purvis, came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kelms about the book. Hoyt says even before the Razorbacks had their own broadcasts, football games were on the radio as part of a Southwest Conference network sponsored by Humble Oil.
That was a complicated problem for Arkansas for several reasons. One is that all the other schools were in Texas, and they therefore dominated the broadcast. But Humble, under that brand name, didn't even exist in Arkansas. It was Esso. And so that was one of the complicating factors when eventually Arkansas was able to start up its own network. They had to get permission from Humble to do it, and the agreement was that it would be strictly confined to stations in Arkansas.
This started, an Arkansas-specific network started in the early 40s.
Well, it was sort of on and off and a little bit irregular in the 40s, mostly with Bob Fulton doing it. And he actually he broadcast on the CBS radio affiliates in Arkansas. And then it was in the late 40s when John Barnhill really decided, athletic director John Barnhill and football coach, decided that he really, he thought it was critical for Arkansas to have its own statewide radio network. He thought that was absolutely essential to the broader success of Razorback sports football in particular. So that's when he put Bob Chain on the path of really setting up what became the real network, which is more or less what we have today, although it's now part of a big conglomerate. But nonetheless, it was so really the radio network that we know now had its origins back in the 40s, but it really came into being in the very early 50s.
You mentioned Bob Chain. He was the first what we would now call sports information director.
Right. He started out as a very young man as what's now called the sports information director. Sports publicity director, and he did a little bit of everything. And it was a very capable, personable guy, and he had just an enormous amount to do with getting the brand of Razorback sports, and again, football in particular, so well known around the state and beyond.
He would drive around the state and basically knock on doors of radio stations and say, "Hey, carry the games."
That's basically what happened. I think he sort of got a map of Arkansas, and he and his wife based themselves in Little Rock, and for a period of days they would drive out to different parts of the state, and it was his goal to visit all the radio stations in the state. They were AM stations at that time, and I think he said there were 34 stations, and he tried to visit nearly all of them. And he got a very warm reception, and they were the stations. Often when he visited, they would actually put him on the air and have him talk about the Razorbacks. But once the network got going, nearly all those stations came on board, and it was, I mean, by today's standards, it would be hard to imagine. But essentially, they were getting the games at almost no charge to them, and that whatever advertising they could sell was profit for them.
Yeah, first price was like $25 a game.
Right, yeah.
And then you sold all the advertising you could.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a great, and that's, you know, that turned out to be a good business strategy for Razorback sports, because it did so much to help establish Razorbacks as part of the culture of Arkansas.
You mentioned that John Barnhill, who was AD in the 40s, athletic director, wanted this broadcast network. He thought it would help, A, solidify a fan base from border to border, and B, help recruiting.
Absolutely. That was a big issue with Barnhill and others associated with the Arkansas football program, because up until that time, a lot of the best prospects, and some of whom went on to be great stars, All-Americans, et cetera, like Bear Bryant would be one of the best-known example, but there were a number of others, particularly from southern and eastern Arkansas. You know, they were on the opposite side of the state from Fayetteville. They didn't have that kind of identification, and so they would go to Alabama or LSU or Ole Miss or one of the other schools in that area. And so Arkansas was losing out on some very good players because they felt no real connection to the Fayetteville campus. So Barnhill understood that, and that was certainly one of the motivating factors behind the establishment of the network.
By the mid-50s, there's a fairly large, a fairly extensive Razorback exclusive radio network.
It really took off. It's amazing. Within just a few years, and it became part of the routine of people in Arkansas listening. And of course, there was no television then, or if there was, there were very, very few games that were ever shown on television. So mostly it was radio, and it really became a part of the sort of the rhythm of Arkansas life, listening to the Razorback games on Saturday. And it spread across the state, and pretty soon you had people from, you know, southeast, southwest, northeast, central Arkansas, as well as northwest Arkansas, who had made a habit of listening to Razorback games.
You mentioned this relationship because until cable television, there were few college games on at all on television.
Yeah, people today don't understand what it was like in those days. And we're talking, of course, TV began to really spread in the early 50s, and that's when some of the cable systems began to go into effect. But there were so few games on. I mean, you look at today, look last Saturday's paper, you look at the list of TV games, and it takes up about a half of a column. You know, you got 40 games listed at least.
And if you want to open your wallet, you could probably see any Division I team through pay-per-view
package. If you want to bad enough, you can do that. You can find a way to get your favorite team or the game you're most interested in. In almost every case, it's available on television. But that was not the case at all. I mean, when the 1954 Arkansas team that was really so sort of instrumental in kind of opening up the modern era of Razorback sports. In 1954, although Arkansas was highly rated and had great success and the big victory over Ole Miss, and they got a lot of national attention, but none of those games were shown on TV until they made it to the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day 55. There had been a couple of other games where Arkansas had been on television before that time, but they were for a very small audience. So it really, even through the 60s and into the 70s, there were not that many games that were shown on television. So radio really remained the way in which people could follow the Razorbacks.
And what games would be on? If Arkansas was on national television, that you could see it, that was an anomaly. Maybe it would happen once a year when you played Texas.
Right. Maybe one, there, you know, you might get one national game and one regional game a year, and that was usually pretty good. And, of course, gradually that changed, and then suddenly, you know, there were games everywhere. But it took a long time for that to happen.
When we talk about the decades, more than 50 years that there's been an exclusive Razorback sports network, it's amazing how few names are associated with play-by-play.
That's right. And when we talk about the voices of the Razorbacks, and when we're really talking about the principal voices of the Razorbacks, that is the play-by-play announcers, especially for football, basketball, and then later, of course, baseball became much more popular. But, you know, Bob Fulton started out really before the official Razorback network came along. Bob eventually left, did mutual baseball game of the day for a while, national broadcast, wound up at South Carolina, and was the South Carolina announcer for many years. And then Wally Ingles, who was involved in radio here in Fayetteville, he became the first real play-by-play announcer for the Razorback Network. He did it for a few years, including the famed 54 season. And then Bob Chain became actually, in addition to all the other things he was doing, he did play-by-play for many years. And then, you know, there were various others along the way. Bud Campbell was a very well-known and popular voice of the Razorbacks, did football. And he, like some of his successors, worked with KATV Channel 7 in Little Rock, which identified itself as the kind of Razorback station for many years. Bud died in a car accident in Little Rock, and there were a couple of others who came in for short terms, Bill Johnson from Conway, and then Sam Smith, who became better known eventually as an NBA play-by-play announcer and worked for the San Antonio Spurs and others. But then the real, when Paul Eales came along in 78, that really was something very special and enduring. And Paul remained in that position until he died in 2006. So, and of course, Bud and then Paul and some and others subsequently also were doing the coaches' shows. And those were very, very popular, especially before you had a lot of games on TV. Because, well, like when Frank Brawls had the Frank Brawls show, a lot of it would actually be showing the film from the game, which most people had not seen unless they had been able to be at the game.
Right. There was that era where you once, because football took off, then basketball. Lenny Van Eman came in, and of course was succeeded by Eddie Sutton.
Right.
That took off. Eventually, baseball takes off. And you had that sort of era where you had Paul Eales, recognizable as the football voice. You heard his voice. If you were a Razorback fan, you instantly knew him. You had Mike Nail at basketball, and you had Chuck Barrett at baseball. And I know that in this era of all these television games, I'm not naive. I'm a radio guy, but I know most people go to TV now. But the thing is, you have different voices every week. It might be an ESPN crew. It might be a CBS crew. With the radio, it's that one voice, and you develop a relationship.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think particularly Paul, Mike Nail, Chuck Barrett, they all had long tenures. And, of course, Chuck is doing everything today.
Yeah.
But you're right. They were recognizable voices, recognizable personalities. Everybody in the state, I'm exaggerating only a little bit, called them by their first name. And still today people talk about, well, I remember when Paul said this, or I remember, you know, Mike did it this way, or Chuck always says this, you know. It's like they're one of your close friends. And in many ways, that's exactly what they are.
If you listen enough, you can tune into a game to your regular announcer. You don't have to know the score. You can hear the voice and know instantly if things are going well or not.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's very clear. I mean, and while I don't think any of the ones that we were talking about are excessively homer in their approach, that is, that they just go overboard about the home team, but it's clear that they all identify or have identified with the Arkansas teams, and that's what the listeners and the fans expect.
Now Chuck Barrett does everything.
Right.
I mean, he's doing football, basketball, baseball. I think I figured out if the baseball team goes to the College World Series, he has 3 weekends a year that he might have off.
Right.
Is that unusual in the broadcasting world?
I think it probably is. Of course, one of the things that's unusual is that there are not that many major colleges that devote that much attention to all three of those sports. I mean, as you well know, while college baseball is very big and very important in this part of the country, in much of the rest of the country, it's not at the same level. And in many cases, it's the local university station, radio station, that does the broadcast, whereas in Arkansas, we have a full-fledged network for baseball as well as basketball and football.
Yeah, I think on any given SEC baseball weekend, you can find at least 30 stations carrying college baseball.
Right, right. That's exactly right.
And that has solidified, no offense to Arkansas State or University of Arkansas Little Rock or UCA in Conway, that has really established Arkansas as the team.
Yeah, it really has. It's interesting to think back on how baseball has really become such an important part of that, and that's something that's basically happened since the radio broadcast began. I think that's had a lot to do with the popularizing of Razorback baseball. Of course, the fact that we've had successful teams and we've got spectacular ballpark for the team to play in. Those are clearly important factors, but you tie all that together, just as has happened with football and basketball, and I think you can see that the radio broadcasts have played an important part in building that up.
It is far harder to do play-by-play than people think.
I believe that. You've had some experience.
You don't know how smooth and how much information Chuck Barrett gets into a baseball game until you've tried to do it.
Right.
He has eyes in the back of his head, I think.
Yeah, I have great admiration for the job that Chuck does. I think he's absolutely one of the best, and we're really lucky to have him. But you're so right, and especially baseball. I mean, I don't have to tell you. I mean, sometimes, especially some of the early season games, I mean, they can drag on forever, and you know, have a 16-4 game, and you know, it's hard to keep up interest. But Chuck does an amazing job, I think, of keeping up that interest despite whatever might be happening to sort of become a little bit on the boring side.
In the book, Voices of the Razorbacks, you do talk about the creation of this network and the people who we have become familiar with. But there's some great anecdotes in here, too, including a one-time football coach who was given a gift of a car and then used that car to leave.
After that memorable 1954 season when Bowden Wyatt was the coach, and Bowden Wyatt was known as someone who didn't particularly like the press or was not generally available to journalists, but he was very successful at that 54 team, and Arkansas fans were so happy and excited that to express appreciation, they bought a brand new Cadillac automobile for Coach Wyatt and gave him a nice cash bonus. And so in return, he displayed his appreciation by getting in that Cadillac and literally driving to Knoxville, Tennessee, where he became coach at his alma mater, the University of Tennessee.
Hoyt Purvis teaches journalism at the University of Arkansas and authored, along with Stanley Sharp, the new book Voices of the Razorbacks. He talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums earlier this month.